is within hearing. Just before we start, Mr. Young.
Yes, sir.
We are reasonably certain that we will finish hearing all of the witnesses tomorrow.
Yes,
sir. So, even if we can hear a little bit longer, I doubt that that will happen. So, everyone can be here tomorrow.
We'll probably line up tomorrow.
Right.
Yes, we two thought that might be the case. Now, just, I mentioned getting back out of sight of that as a value. Whether you want to do that, whether to arrange it for Thursday or Friday, or although you still need time to think about that, that's fine too.
I think the time when we want to do it, we're going to do it, even we're doing our deliberations, which is in early October.
In
which case we could just get Ms. Prendergast to get in touch with Mr. Fitzpatrick and Mr. Williams.
Yes.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Because we're doing that in Wanaka, and we would just organise a couple of things at the same time.
Understood.
Yes. Yeah. Yeah.
Mr. Poynton offered to provide a copy of
that. Yes, I was. What I can cover about that, I shouldn't be presumptuous, I mentioned the closing, but I can, and I was going to tonight work through the list of things that I might address.
Right.
If you would grant me leave, it's fine, I think it's a better fit in this case. And any other things you might want. For example, in the Southland case, someone helped in the office to send me 5 New York decisions on conservation orders, not the one I want. So.
No, and it's not Judge New York's either.
That's why I'll be going back.
Yes.
So I'm trying to get that, but I've got more cases, so I haven't done as much as I wanted to on that, but I was going to include that in that document.
2016, and it's 220.
Who's Judge?
4 foot.
Now, I am familiar with the sequence and so I'm interested to get into that a bit.
And in terms of that plan that Mr. Keeney offered, though, I mean, it just be handed up.
I can do that.
Yeah.
I just want to make sure I've seen it.
Yeah, but well, that's okay.
So we might be able to do that first thing in the morning or possibly later this afternoon.
Yeah, that would be fine. Yeah, thanks.
Right, so I have Mr. Greenaway here. I think we have a summary. So you now need to read that from 2.1, I suggest, sir, if you have any straight start there and skip the introduction.
Yes, that's fine, thanks.
Right, my evidence largely concerns the gondola, rural visitor pods and recreation activities across the site generally. Effects on tourism and recreation of the rural residential pods almost entirely reflect the findings of Stephen Brown in relation to maintaining landscape, natural character and visual amenity boundaries. And you've heard from Mr. Brown, I believe. In my evidence, I provide a summary of central and local government agency expectations for management of the recreation and tourism values of the Upper Koala River Valley and the tourism and recreation activities occurring there. Summary, the management agencies are seeking provision for a wide range of recreation and tourism activities while maintaining the area's natural qualities, ability of the remarkable ski area to support increased visitor numbers, the provision of quality visitor facilities, maintenance and improvement to public access opportunities where appropriate, maintenance of locally significant fishery values, and those are specific to the Otago Fish and Game Council, and public access on the true right of the Koala River linking with existing Queenstown Trails, and that's specific to the Queenstown Trails Trust. My main conclusions in relation to the potential effects of the land uses proposed within the QPSZ are that tourism is fundamental to the Queenstown economy and community and is experiencing substantial growth beyond national averages. This growth is a cause of local traffic, accommodation and activity congestion, which can lead to visitor dissatisfaction and a negative commercial and community spiral. Congestion and access limits can either be used as a deliberate mechanism for controlling growth, and or innovative methods can be used to accommodate growth while limiting its adverse effects. I consider the QPSZ proposal to be of the latter ilk. QPSZ proposal has limited potential for adverse effects on existing local recreation values while offering benefits by, for example, extending the regional trails network.
The proposal responds well to local tourism congestion issues by creating a significant attraction of periodic dependence on the local road network, while increasing the capacity of existing tourism infrastructure near Queenstown Airport as a summer and winter destination. My evidence in chief recommended the following to strengthen the QPSZ, and relevant rules have been included in the QPSZ provisions. Where the proposed public access opportunities complement regional walk, river and cycle networks of both construction standard and connectivity. I won't read out the rule numbers. Where the public access on proposed public walk and cycleways is secured in perpetuity by an appropriate legal mechanism. The degree to which the applicant guarantees that public access areas and tracks will be maintained to an agreed standard, and one which matches that of the regional walk and cycle network, and the ability of gondola construction activities and bridge and wharf design to avoid or minimise effects on existing recreation and tourist activities on and beside the Kawarau River. Use of the river for additional commercial jet boat traffic will require separate consents. No evidence has been presented by council in disagreement with my findings. Thank you.
I don't know if you can even answer this question, but one thing that we've been talking about and don't have is any sort of research into public expectations and users of, in your case, users of trails in particular, as to what they value and what they wouldn't like to see, not in terms of extending the trails, because that's a given, but what the experience. So I'm thinking particularly of the trail at the other end of Morven Hill, where it goes up a bit, and the Queenstown Park proposes a full view, and whether that, as any sort of knowledge or research or anything that would lead you to believe that users of that trail would be concerned about it. Because it's a bit of a gap in our understanding.
There's certainly plenty of research nationally as to what visitors are expecting and seeking in different settings. So nothing specific on this trail that I'm aware of. But if you generalise it, and it's pretty easy to do, natural qualities, landscape values are critical, and low conflict. So well-designed tracks that enable people to enjoy their particular activities without annoying or being annoyed by other users of that specific area. So, and there's a whole raft of other information about suitable track standards for different types.
I'm not so much concerned about track standards.
Yeah, but I mean those are the things the research indicates.
I've been wandering around on the trails a little bit over the last 6 weeks, and I understand what's there. It's of a good standard.
Yes. Oh no, it's
experience, because that whole moment that, as I said to other witnesses, there's little or no development other than basic rural stuff from Boyd Road through to Chard Farm, and this is going to dramatically change that, particularly from that more important part of the town.
Well, Stephen Brown is the individual that I rely on most in terms of going to the same. Will the outstanding landscape values of that setting be maintained with the proposal in place? So that's his findings are critical to mine. In terms of you're right in terms of the eastern end of the trail, which raises up, and that is further from the proposal area. The fortuitous thing with the design of the trail on the true left is that for a lot of the area where it will be adjacent
to... Yeah, I'm aware of that. A lot of it's down on the river mat and thoroughly screened by heavy willow growth. Mm. But at either end, when you come in, you rise up a bit at out of Lake Hay, there's a short rise just past that bridge, and then the other end up by the deer farm, that's more extensive.
That's an interesting thing too. I understand that the route is mostly from upriver downriver, so the majority of people are experiencing it heading down the Kawarau.
Yeah.
So if you imagine your view doing that while you're riding it, you will interact with the gondola wires and the gondola itself, where it's adjacent to the river, and you're in a more developed setting, so you have the airport on the side, and then you go up, shot over, past the
surge ponds are into quite a bit of setting past the airport.
Yeah, I'm really just focusing on
just that one.
Oh, well, maybe start shot of the country, because you know you're into the, that's where you're into the river. Thoroughly, once you're below the shot of it,
yes,
it becomes a great deal less moving.
Yeah. Well, if you visualise the experience heading downstream, heading east, so you've passed the interaction with any cables at that point, and your experience will be looking downstream as you go through. So you've got it over there and above you. The time that you will interact with it is when you are stopping and looking back up the river valley from that high point. And at that stage, you're getting around the corner. If you look at the map, there's the about the names of the hills on the eastern side of the Rastersburn.
Where did you think of that?
I'm not a ranging expert on that. It's not personal.
Sorry, so that you're getting into a lower interaction with that, and relying on Stephen's reference. He is saying that the landscape values, the visual reality, the natural character is sustained with that proposal in place. So, I mean, there is a change, there is an effect, but in terms of going through and saying, how do you develop a very controlled tourism asset that is going to put through a high number of people with a low level effect. The balance, in my mind, is there for recreational tourism. The trick with this is that with the additional connectivity with the routes, there will be more people using the trail. The proposal will result in more people in that area experiencing it.
Well, it actually make quite a nice little short round trip, won't it, if you can go down one side and back up the other.
Yes, no, I mean, that will be quite fantastic. Yeah.
Because doing the whole trail from Queenstown to Goodston, you'd want to look back from much. Most people would probably be looking for a lift to get home again.
It would be interesting. I was trying to work out in my mind what would be the route that people would take, you know, whether it's clockwise or anti-clockwise, and I haven't worked out which way people would go. Normally, if you had the river crossing near the Shotover, downstream from Shotover Confluence, I think you'd have people going in both directions.
It depends where the coffee is.
Yes. Yeah, so it's the effect on people's use of that trail, maybe more so from having more people on a section of the trail than they have on the gondola in place.
Actually, my observation is going on the existing trail, it's going up trail. It's less wild scenic because you can see Queenstown in the distance, you can certainly see the airport and industrial buildings that.
For that bit of upstream of the shot over.
Yeah.
But I mean, you still have the view of the hill on the outside, which is great. Yeah.
Okay. In your evidence in chief, you talk about the trail being largely, if not fully, located on Esplanade Reserve. I hadn't realised that. Is that the case?
There's a mixture of routes there. If you go to the. Are you talking about the proposed? Or the
proposed.
I can't remember if I was talking about now or in the future. I think it was in the future.
You must have been talking about
it. Yes, talking about in the future with a different proposal in place. There would be, am I correct in that? There would be the Eastern Reserve given over on the, well, and the route would mostly be within that network protected.
The trail was indicative, and so you could, with the police and the council, have an ESMAR reserve and kept it that way, or conversely, if that wasn't going to be desirable, to be on the edge or inside of the ESMAR reserve, still retaining views protected by other legal mechanisms.
Yes,
I think the intention would be put them in the most scenic location where you get to experience the views
Yes, that was a future state. The on the true right in the development area, it's a road reserve out against the river, which is, it doesn't form a practical access area.
No, I don't understand that. Okay, I think it's all right into that.
Yes, in your evidence at chief at paragraph 6.5, you're talking about off-season, not winter activity.
Yes.
What, if you're looking at, 2,000 hectares of land, what activity would grow the and support the operation of the gondola off-season?
The critical thing is getting out to the ski field still. So that's getting into an alpine setting, easily getting into an alpine setting, that will be the critical thing. If you look at the likes of Whakapapa at the moment, their chairlift use is getting very good over summer. And they're stockpiling snow over winter so that they can actually put a cafe out with tables on the ice in summer, so that people can get sunburned very effectively from the water. I'm not warn everyone about that.
Such neat words.
So it's the critical thing is that alpine setting, getting people up and to interact with the rocks and to develop services up there like a stockpile snow cafe. So it's the experience of being on the gondola and getting into the alpine setting. And it's quite cool because it's so efficient in doing that. You could put in the downhill mountain biking and all those additional things, but the critical thing really will be getting up there, getting the views, experiencing the gondola itself.
I was interested in how you make money off the gondola when it's not taking people to the ski view.
I suspect it will be visible all year. It will just have a constant through for people here. It's going to be, people with their ski boots on in winter, but the rest of the time, it will be a thing to do too. Like the skyline here, you're not going up there to ski, you're going up there to mountain bike now. But for many years, it was just going up there and having your coffee in a restaurant, and very effective in all season use.
And my other question is, looking ahead 10 or 20 years, what kind of recreational attractions would add to the experience for a visitor to Queenstown?
So if you
that might be provided on this property as opposed to somewhere else? Where's it going in 10 or 20 years' time?
Well, you could imagine having a whole raft of artisan activities over there, artists' enclave, food enclave, very high-end retail enclave. Just in terms of standard visitor services around the little base station area, there's a lot really in terms of what you could put in there. The whole shebang. So you're getting people into a setting that is quite different from downtown Queenstown. It won't have all the traffic hurrying around and all the standard chain retail activities. You'll be in quite an alternative, quiet setup, but with all the visitor services that you would expect. But, and they will be what the market demands.
I'm waiting for you to answer the question, because I could have imagined all of those things. Yes. What do you as a specialist know about trends in recreation and what tourists seek and experiences when they come here that that would be met in a place like this site rather than just anywhere?
There's a great quote by a futurologist, and I can't remember his name, but I remember what he said. His biggest job was telling people that the future will probably be most like the current day.
Does more research support that?
I often get this question in hearings when you're talking about what. Yeah, but it's an interesting one though, because you could not have foreseen, for example, stand-up paddleboards 3 or 4 years ago. There's no way I could have predicted that.
Drones.
What would be another really good recent one? Sea kayaking.
Stargazing.
Stargazing
is a great thing.
I think you could, because that's an extension on an existing set of activities. Those things are there already. But to go through and manage for what people are likely to do, wing gliding. Oh, man activity then. Mm. This is when jumping off the hills with very little support and strength after the adolescent treatment of killing himself. These are left field activities that Crop Art and Rec deal with. If I was running a tourism enterprise now and I was looking at what to do, I would be looking at what people are finding very, very attractive now and doing it really, really well and maintaining flexibility so that you can keep on moving ahead. But I wouldn't try to predict that there's going to be a whole lot of very unusual new stuff coming through. I mean, mountain biking with 50-year-olds and 60-year-olds. 10 years ago, I wouldn't have seen that as being such a big thing, but it is huge. It's enormous. They say mountain biking is a new golf. And that is a huge change in ACC statistics. I'd be cautious about giving you any predictions apart from the things that people are enjoying at the moment are more likely to be enjoyed in the future as well. And if they're done really well, if you go through and create a product that's got the right price point and it's got the right level of service and you've got the right staff, you can actually give a good personal relationship with the person that's coming through, not treating them like just another customer coming through today. You're going to work. You'll know if you go to a cafe and you've got a staff member there who looks after you nicely, that is the cafe that you'll go to. But it's not any different from the other cafe apart from that one thing. You're differentiating your product based on doing stuff really, really well. But this whole concept of actually having a low vehicle enclave is, I don't know if you'd call it futuristic, but it is looking at people wanting to have a different experience from what they are doing, with the run-of-the-mill stuff. That's a defining characteristic. You've given people an opportunity to do something different, taking a gondola to get there, or a ferry, or a jet boat to get to that site, or walk or cycle. You're creating a different product, serving pretty much what you would get from a lot of other places in one particular area. And you can go through the yellow pages and look at tourism activities and pick out them all and see if they would fit in a particular place. And if you had someone who's willing to take the risk from a business perspective and they're able to do it in such a way that they weren't destroying the ambience of that particular thing, then you could probably do it there.
Do you give advice of that kind?
Yes, we've had these conversations over this exercise. You're not going to predict the next bungee jumping with this. But if something like that turns up and it fits in that site and it's not noisy, for example, I think that would be a key differentiator of the site. It's a quiet, peaceful setting. Then you could pop it in there, assuming it complied with all the other rules that fit it in.
Oh, there's an activity status, I think, for commercial recreation, and I was just thinking, where would that go?
Yes.
Left wide open for the next 10 or 20 years, where might it go?
See, I wouldn't visualise if I was doing that, having a reverse bungee jump in that setting. I would put it as a rule that excluded it, but if I was managing the site, I wouldn't want people screaming loudly because they went flying up in the air. That just would not suit the ambience that you were creating in there, which was more that, it could be the artisan food and the artisan art and, that more high-end exercise. You really would, though, this is the antithesis of freedom camping. You go in through and you create a setting where you control everything that people do in terms of where all the sewage goes and where they wander, and they have an excellent time, and you extract as much money out of them as possible, which is what you want for tourism in this type of setting. Keeping it tight and keeping people very happy so they go out and they say, we were really happy to have all that money extracted from us.
Mr. Chair, you carry on. I'll just check the last bit. Oh, hang on, I just want to check the last bit. There's a statement in the it's well into your evidence in chief, and you're quoting something from the draft revised conservation management strategy.
That was in the appendix.
Yeah, in the appendix, but it hit me as a statement about what might be going on here. So it's about, I'm flicking through roughly page 29, sort of more than halfway through. And then there's the paragraph 3.2.2 will get you there in the appendix. Yes, the draft revised conservation management strategy.
Is it?
Yeah. And you see that paragraph that begins, it's above the line saying expected outcomes. The paragraph says the remarkable range of its close proximity to Queenstown and outstanding landscape and recreational values is subject to many development proposals. Providing recreational and tourism opportunities for a growing number of visitors to some parts of the remarkables, while ensuring protection of outstanding landscapes, indigenous ecosystems and natural character is an ongoing challenge.
Yes.
Statement of, obvious statement, but it seemed to be apt for this situation.
It is, yeah, very good.
Yeah, though, I'm trying to understand how bringing this many people and this many potential visitors into both the valley and, I mean, I can understand once you get them up to the ski field, you can lose them again in large part. You can either keep them in the buildings or the base building, or you can lose them into Lower Wye Creek track or whatever. So yes. Tell me about how you reconcile that paragraph.
I would expect that 99% of people going up to Gondola, probably 99.9%, will not want to go anywhere near Wye Creek. You're talking about quite a different set of skills. If you're going to go into White Creek, that is a remote access area, and you can actually know what you're doing. So you may increase use of that Glenroy area. I'm actually looking at in section 3.2, the second page with the map of the 1998
map there.
So you can imagine the Glenroy and area and the Wentworth area that's got a network of tracks in there. You may have increased use in that setting, but there is no reason that the people who, the accessibility for that setting is very similar in the future to what it is now. If you're going to go off front country setting there, you will still be able to do it in the future. What I'm trying to say is there probably won't be a big change to the number of people that are skilled enough to do that in the future using the gondola. So you've got a very confined market using the gondola in the summer.
And it's in the summer, and it's the people who want the experience of the gondola ride, the view, and something to eat when they get to the top and turn around and go down to the bottom.
Yeah. You're not catering for adventurers by setting up this type of service. This is, you can imagine, and this would just be a classic for, Chinese reward tour services. So you've got someone who's been working for a company in China for 30 or 40 years, and they get this wonderful, guided tour overseas, and they're a great market, and they're very controlled. So you'll do these five things on your trip. You'll go up the gondola, you'll go to the top, you'll spend an hour there, and you'll come back down again. So that's a sort of real mass market exercise. Very confined, very controlled, profitable and low impact. So that's the strong focus on that. Then you will, I'm assuming, you will have people that will use the gondola to then go for a wander around.
What do you see when you're up there though?
That's a good question.
What do you see when you're up there? I mean, the reality is that the Michael Stewfield doesn't have much.
I've used this old story quite a bit in the hearings. When I was a ranger at Cape Cadavers looking out to the Gannets there, the Gannets at Cape Cadavers, quite an extraordinary setting. I was asked to take the rangers, a friend of the rangers out to the colony to show her. She was from London, her name was Rose. And there was over 40 minute four-wheel drive route to get out there if you do the inland section. And we got to, halfway there, to a grotty paddock had a couple of dead lambs in it. It was, you know, Hawke's Bay dry, hardly any grass at all. And she got out, she said, stop the car. And she got out and she burst into tears. She'd never seen anything so wondrous as this bannock. And, you know, I've got such a clear memory of her being gobsmacked by the sense of open space. And I can't even remember what her reaction was when she got to the gannets. So you've got to look at who the market is that's coming to these settings. So they're not us in terms of having been around the mountains a lot. They're given an opportunity to get to the top up there and look down and look around. And that is really quite exciting. It's easy to take this sort of stuff for granted.
It's a bit like the existing gondola.
Yes, but this, you're getting a lot higher and you are actually getting into an alpine environment. So it's quite
different. You get a view from the existing gondola.
Well, you get a view as you go up this gondola. So you're going over the rocks, you're floating over the rocks. What's over that ridge and you're in? I've actually got not a problem with, I mean, if you go to Whakapapa, for example, as we did a couple of years ago, to do that summit thing, once you get into the field, you are looking up at those quite proximate ridge lines. And at looking at a couple of years ago, and they were looking to develop that product, it wasn't enough to do. People got up there and they stood around. What are we doing now? You know, so they wandered over there and they built a snowman. And
I'm taking the chairlift to the top of the side. That's the simpler. That's what you're doing. On the real paper, isn't it?
Yeah.
But if you add up, the field is actually quite enclosed. Yeah. And all you look at is the top of Coronet Peak.
Yeah, well, again, this is, you know, you've probably seen an awful lot of New Zealand.
Very tight places in the world.
Yeah,
tourists do get options. They don't all have to come to Queenstown.
Yeah. Yep. But if you think of that sort of that large market where you've got people on booked, organised tours who are going to do this quick thing. They're not going to spend 3 or 4 hours up there, you know, wandering around. They're up there, do it, have a look, come back down, go through. And that's why you then need to develop that sort of artisan stuff halfway along to start creating more of a product that people will hang around for and enjoy as well. So you've got multiple things in there.
You're talking about in the village. In the RB3 village, are you?
The village. Concept that we're you know, where it transitions into the
government. Yes. So creating that sort of, you know, traffic free artisan type setup through there.
I don't think that's going to be traffic free through there.
Traffic free in a relative way. Most of the people who will get there will be on the gondola or going by boat or walking or cycling through.
Yeah, quite a substantial rural residential component passing through there.
But compare it to Queenstown. This is where you've got to compare it to. You get in the centre of Queenstown and you're in a eroded setting. Very clearly eroded setting. This is quite a different concept.
Yeah. I have one last thing that I just want to learn from you about. Later on, in moving on 2 or 3 pages through the summary of the CMS, there's a paragraph just above item 3.3, the Otago Regional Council. And the first to the party size is in the various visitor management areas.
Yes.
But for those of you who can't see, preferred maximum party sizes for front country and dock estates. Visitor management areas from 15 to 50 people in a party, with 30 or fewer people seen per visit. But these are well exceeded in the rest of Burn Recreation Reserve by activities in and around the remarkable ski field.
Yes. Yeah, these are...
And it goes on, obviously that's been a deal, so there's a concession and it's a route. Yeah. But tell me a bit more about that and where it's going to go.
This is all part of the Recreation Opportunity Spectrum Planning tool, which is a standard device that recreation managers use.
Nice.
And it's a blunt tool to go through and say that if you're going to manage a broad area, you divide it up into recreation classes. And on the preceding page, there's the... little coloured extract. So you understand that you've got these different it's a spectrum of recreation opportunities from urban to wilderness.
And so there are just rules of thumb that are applied in the New Zealand interpretation of the recreation opportunity spectrum, which is an American tool from the 70s, I guess. And they apply these rules of thumb. But clearly, there are unders and overs on that. And there's, even though you would have all ski fields are front country settings, they are clearly exceeding in all those areas. It's a rule of thumb.
So the tool is not apt?
No, the tool is.
The pressures are not real, so the concessions can be granted. What's going on?
If you had a undeveloped front country setting, so I'm just trying to think what would be a good analogy.
Somewhere on the other side of the lake that we can see from here.
Yeah, well, I'm not actually too sure if there's a considered front country, because it's based on access.
It's not that accessible.
Well, the edge, actually, there is. The edge is accessible because it's accessible by sea, but as soon as you get past that, you're getting into, actually it's not classed in there, but it'll be in the sort of backcountry setting. So you can see the entire remarkable ski field is classed as backcountry. So I mean, it's merely used as a rule of thumb if you were looking at a new development area that hasn't got any other guidelines in place.
So you'd use it for a new development?
You would.
It to evaluate what was going on in the existing area?
You would as well. So if you had a set of concessions that have been approved for a backcountry setting and they've got up to a particular level, you might say, okay, no more, because the encounter rates are getting too high in that area. For a wilderness area, you would not offer a concession at all, because that's not permitted under the not permitted under the CNS. In a setting like this, you would go through and say, okay, the front country setting is contiguous with the remarkable ski area, so you talk about the Lachlan corridor, and that is a very high use area. You agree that in that part of the remarkables. There's a growth scenario. How do you manage a growth scenario in that type of setting? So there's a product, you've got a road, and you've got an option for a gondola. Can the gondola go ahead while managing adverse effects in that particular area? Stephen Brown's quite confident that the landscape effects can be managed. The recreation use of the rest of the corridor area, that whole slope, is actually very, very low. So there are very minimal adverse effects on other users of that setting. Probably the biggest hot spot would be the climbing spot on the rest of the road. So it's right near the road at the moment, so it's not a remote setting or a backcountry setting at all, so don't really worry too much. And then you have the cycling use along the river and the jet boat activities as well. So those.
The fishing.
And the fishing, rafting. So, and you've got an activity area that's got noisy jet boats going through. If this was the Greenstone River, you might have a completely different approach. Clearly, but this is not. Yeah. No, I'm sorry, but I often get with the Rolls rules. And as you go through and actually say in the CMS, the rules for this particular place are an encounter rate of no more than X, and concessions will be offered up to that and no more. In this type of setting, it's a rule of thumb, it's a reminder, it's a start of 10 when you're going through a panel. So, yeah.
Thank you, that's helpful. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Thank you, sir. Mr. Gunnell's just flown in, so he's here, and that is my only other witness I have for today, but the rest will line up tomorrow.
Yeah.
return to Coventry.
Right, I used the computable general equilibrium, or CGE, model of the Queenstown regional economy to estimate the gondola's economic impact. Our CGE model portrays the Queenstown economy in 2016, spanning 106 industries. CGE models can generate more conservative economic impacts than other modelling approaches, such as multiplier analysis. This is because CGE models assume that resources, land, labour, capital are fixed at any given period in time. Therefore, an expansion in one part of the Queenstown economy, for example tourism, will draw resources away from other types of economic production, for example agriculture or manufacturing. The key assumptions used in the modelling scenarios. The gondola and visitor accommodation construction costs and visitor number estimates were provided by QPL. We assume that all out-of-town visitors stay an extra day in the Queenstown region to enjoy the gondola. Some of this extra day stay will be spent enjoying non-gondola tourism activities in the region, generating wider spillovers beyond the gondola. Per-day visitor spending was sourced from Statistics New Zealand. We split this per-day spending between gondola tickets and on other tourism activities. To maintain our conservative approach, we scale additional non-gondola spending down by 50% for international and domestic tourists. We also assume that only 50% of the spending on gondola tickets is additional. That is, the tourists would have spent half of that amount in the region if the gondola weren't present. Key results. The gondola would generate significant economic benefits for the Queenstown economy. During the gondola construction phase, the Queenstown economy expands by $29.9 million. Economy-wide employment grows by 148 full-time jobs. The industries that directly benefit the most are non-residential construction, construction services, rental and hiring businesses, metal manufacturing, non-metallic mineral manufacturing, fuel and transport support services. As the regional economy grows and incomes and spending rise, other parts of the economy benefit through spillovers, for example, accommodation, real estate services, and retailing. Once fully operational, the gondola generates substantial new tourism activity. By 2026, QPL expects it to attract 779,555 passengers. The total injection of additional tourism spending in 2026 due to the gondola's presence is 109 million. The present value of this is 55.4 million in 2016 prices. Construction of visitor accommodation in 2026 adds a further $7.4 million of spending in present value. This new tourism and construction activity lifts GDP $20.4 million above what it would otherwise have been in 2026. This creates an additional 177 jobs economy-wide. Accommodation, sport and recreation services, travel agency and tour arrangement services, heritage and artistic activities, retailing, food and beverage services, and gambling activities are the main winners. I conclude that the proposed gondola and visitor accommodation construction would generate substantial additional economic activity in the Queenstown regional economy, create hundreds of new jobs and lift household incomes. It will therefore support improvements in regional living standards. Areas of disagreement are minor and related to costs. Mr. Osborne, on behalf of QDLC, noted that, at a general level, I agree with the approach taken in assessing the potential benefits in terms of economic activity. The methodology, assumptions, and scenarios were not questioned. Mr. Osborne also noted that costs as well as benefits should be considered when analysing the gondola's impacts. In my supplementary statement dated 28th of August 2017, I concurred with this statement and noted that our modelling results indicate that some sectors contract as resources are instead directed to the more profitable non-residential and tourism-related sectors. Given the significant economic benefits I have estimated, For the proposed gondola to have a net negative impact on the Queenstown community's wellbeing, its economic, social, environmental or cultural costs would need to be enormous. I've seen no evidence to suggest that this would be the case.
Couple of areas I'd like to discuss with you. 3.2, we assume that all out-of-towns are to stay at the jail. Now, are you really sure about that? I mean, did you hear Mr. Greenaway, for example, talking about the substantial market in reward-based tourism? Most people will be on the timetable. They're not going to extend that for next year. They might substitute it. Between their choice of activities they do on, he said, I know, they'll do five things while they're in Queenstown. They might do, not go on the steam or not go to the other gondola or something, but will they stay an extra day? Or will some of them at least just substitute?
It is an assumption. It's very hard to find robust evidence to determine exactly how long people would stay. But what we do in our modelling is rather than assuming that an entire day's worth of spending is generated by the gondola, we wind that back by 50%. Mm. And that partly reflects the substitution effect you refer to there. It could also be seen as people staying half a day extra, but spending all of their additional per day spend. So you're right, it is an assumption. I believe it is a reasonable assumption, given the scale of this initiative. It is something quite different. I believe it would add to the tourism stock, not just substitute. Another point I would make is that reflecting that assumption is just an assumption, albeit I think a reasonable one. I also carried out some sensitivity analysis, whereby I scaled it back by a further 50%, which is equivalent to saying visitors stay half an extra day and half of their spending is net additional, or visitors stay an extra quarter of a day and all of their spending is additional. And even when you do that sensitivity analysis, the GDP impacts are still significant.
Just on that point, given that the evidence is that it's important for the ski field, skiers who are coming to ski and use the gondola, they'll just come for the amount of time they're going to go skiing, won't they?
Potentially, although they do count for a lower share of visitor numbers than non-skiers. So again, if you change those assumptions to assume absolutely zero additional spend, it wouldn't have a material impact on the overall economic impact. The overall economic impact would still be very significant in my view.
The other area was in respect of your numbers. Mm. Are they big numbers? In terms of earnings and so on, I'm interested in the proportions of that compared to the overall tourism spend in and around Queenstown.
In terms of the overall economic impacts relative to the...
Well, tourism as a whole, you've got, 55.4 million and 216 prices. So what's the whole tourism sector generating in 2016 prices?
I don't have that off the top of my head. I could certainly find it out very easily.
Don't you deal with this in your evidence in chief?
No, I've got a dollar value on that. I know it's around 20% of employment in the regional economy. I don't believe I do put a number on the size of the tourism sector in total, but as I say, I could find out for you very quickly this afternoon. I'm very happy to do so.
I seem to remember that in the council zeros that we received in February last year, someone did put a number on the 2015 contribution of tourism to the local economy. I can't remember what it was off the head, and I can't remember whose evidence it was.
We might task ourselves and try and find that, and you can do your own.
Yes, I'm reasonably sure that someone did present that.
If you're happy to carry on with fishing, of course, and then we can look at information and bring it through on a later date.
What I would say, though, is that hopefully my evidence was pretty clear that the modelling approach we use is a conservative one.
I can see why you said that.
So this is not trying to artificially inflate the numbers. It simply reflects the fact that based on visitor number projections, it's generating a lot of new people coming to Queenstown. These people spend a lot of money every day.
Well, is it, will people, a whole lot of extra people come to Queenstown, or will the people who come to Queenstown maybe use this gondola, because they were coming anyway?
Well, I've used QPL's visitor number assumptions. My view on that is that they look reasonable, and in addition, this is what they've based their business plan on. I think their incentive is to get those numbers as reasonable as possible. Otherwise, they're going to not be doing their financial analysis on a correct set of assumptions. It is a transformational piece of tourism infrastructure and a big attraction, and I think the numbers presented in terms of additional visitors, I think those are reasonable.
This is more speculative, Mr. Bowman.
Sure.
Something like $85 million to build the gondola. Mm-hmm. If that $85 million was invested, available for investment in something else that would promote tourism and produce the benefits that you've modelled, what might it be?
In terms of QPL's investment?
No, I'm just thinking in general terms. If $85 million was pumped into tourism infrastructure in Queenstown and it produced similar benefits, what kind of thing might it be?
You could certainly see a case for investing in Queenstown's infrastructure more broadly in terms of its roads and
all that.
Sort of thing. Yeah. Well, I think the key benefit here is that the region is getting an improvement in its infrastructure at pretty much zero cost to ratepayers. I'm not sure it's easy to make that.
No, I didn't think it was, but I often think, you know, it's easy to, it's like the cargo cult to me, you know, there's going to be a gondola. $85 million, well spent. Where would it be well spent if you wanted to promote the most beneficial outcomes for tourism?
Sure, well, what I would say to that is that the $85 million worth of investment is generating a huge amount of economic return.
Well, it is.
Year in, year out. And that is nearly all additional money coming into the region because it's effectively exports. It's people like me coming from Wellington. It's people coming from Australia and China and wherever else. This is all additional money coming into the economy, not just making the existing economy run a little bit more smoothly, which is what you might expect if you invested in roads or sewerage or something less glamorous.
The benefits will be less visible from those, but they might affect more people and have a different an outcome for the future.
They might do. It would be fair to say I'm not a sewerage expert, but I can certainly
see. I don't intend to be one.
I can see how that can deliver benefits. But those benefits would not be export benefits.
Thank you, that's helpful.
Mr. Paul, I know you appropriately qualified that as a speculative inquiry, and I just sort of support it as a for a couple of the years. Now, you might be an investment, and I thought we'd love all of the $75 million going into infrastructure elsewhere, but I think the rate payer point and how you might generate that and the zero cost point are important. I don't want to speak for Mr. Paul, but that degree of
achievement. Score anything or anything.
No,
so I was just curious because, you know, it's not the first time I've seen a proposal for a gondola.
Sure.
Thanks, Mr. Chair.
Commissioner,
I'll put
that mine,
sorry.
Now, to my witnesses for today, sir, and I have to acknowledge you gave me a steer about how quickly this would move some months ago, and I probably should have listened a little harder, so I apologise for that. But we'll have everyone lined up for tomorrow to get through things tomorrow.
We've only got three of the list, is that true? This is Anderson, Anderson, and Sargent.
Mr. Porter's available. Mr. Porter's available.
We didn't have any questions.
No, and he has a summary. Jack tonight, maybe some things he'd like to comment on. And then Mr. Sargent, who's been patiently waiting down back there. So, yeah, we should. That's just the three, possibly four.
That's fine.
Yes, I do. I realise it's your time, so I apologise for that. But
it's okay. You're not the only one who sought more time than I ended up with us dealing with, I'm afraid.
As I say, you gave me a steer. that's right. The only constraint we have is that Mr. Anderson can only be here at 1, other than you normally take lunch. I don't imagine you'll be a long time with him. Would that be okay if we call him around 1?
It may be appropriate because it may be we've finished everyone else by that stage.
That's right. If we can knock it out then it's that's good. We'll talk. I would be reluctant to stop halfway through Mr. Sargent to slot him in. And I imagine you might be too if you're we can hold him back for after Mr. Anderson, we'll see how we go, I guess.
Well, it might be finished with Mr. Sargent.
Yes, that's right, I'll be into that
point. If we win, that could be real.
Sorry?
If we win first, I could certainly live with it.
Sorry, what was that question?
That wasn't a question, it was just an observation that I could, speaking for myself, I could live with interacting with the sailor.
Well, I'm in your hands, if you're happy with that,
I can't see that, well, we might not be finished with Mr. Sailor, but we'll see how we go.
All right.
Okay, thank you. I'll adjourn for the name.